Hello, thanks for joining our recap of Spy Games Episode 3. We're continuing to take a deeper look at the new reality show Spy Games that's airing in the U.S. on Bravo. My name is Jeff Quest. I run the site SpyRight.com, where I write about espionage fiction that I read and collect. And not only do I love spies, but I love competition shows like Survivor and The Amazing Race. This is right up my alley. And I'm pleased to welcome the James Bond to my Money Penny, my co-host, Matthew Bradford.
Hi, I run the spy website, 00section.com, also dedicated to all sorts of spy literature, spy movies, spy TV, anything. I have less history with reality competition shows, although I do enjoy a few that have been on this network, Bravo, and I have worked in it, though, so I bring something to the table of experience in that area.
Yeah, and so I think one of the things that we're enjoying is kind of taking a look at this show, Spy Games, through the lens of some of the famous real and fictional spy books and movies that have been out there. And so that's kind of what our focus is with this recap that we're doing. So let's just jump right into it. What do you think of this episode?
I thought last week's was better. I thought this one was good, but also frustrating, because surveillance was what I was looking most forward to, probably, of all the skills that they would learn on this. And we just didn't get much of it. We didn't get the training. Like, last week we had more training, and I liked that. You know, Doug lectures them in a room for a little bit. It seemed clear that they did have some other training after that, but we didn't get to see it. And then the situation, I mean, I don't know what it was with the logistics of filming a reality show where you're doing surveillance and, you know, you need to worry about releases from people so you can't have too crowded a street and stuff. But it didn't make a very good neighborhood for a surveillance operation on a spy reality show, because it was a fairly empty streets and stuff. It would have been cooler if we'd seen them, you know, actually in a crowded environment. But I'm getting way ahead. But yeah, so this episode was kind of disappointing to me. What did you think?
I don't think I was as disappointed as you necessarily. I think, were there things I wish they had done a little differently? I think you kind of highlight on some of those moments that they could have made a little more spy-y and really dive into some of the training stuff that I think is more fun. But I also think it seems pretty apparent that this show has no real desire to dive into the training part of this. Yeah. And so they really want to jump right to the action. And I enjoyed the action that we did get. I mean, while it could have been done a little better, I still thought it was a pretty fun and very stereotypical spy type of thing. And I enjoyed that aspect of it. So maybe let's jump back to the beginning and start from there. You know, of course, we've got to start out with some dossier drama. You know, this is kind of the reoccurring theme with this show. I think they need to give Nika some sort of kickback or something for stealing that one in the first place, because I don't know what they would have done if she hadn't
done
that.
That's a good point. And it's still unclear what's so important about these dossiers. They keep having contestants tell us that the dossiers are incredibly valuable, but we don't know why. They've done nothing to demonstrate that. And even in this one, they, you know, ask at one point if Nika's even read the dossier that she stole, and she's like, yeah, I read it all. There was nothing in there. You know, like, what is so valuable about these dossiers? It's unclear.
Yeah, well, and it doesn't seem like, I mean, I would just be, one of my comments is, why does anybody write anything down in them? If there's right. The possibility they're going to be stolen, and they, you know, maybe you just remember everything, you know, maybe it's more of a memory thing.
Yeah. Although amidst all this dossier drama at the beginning, we do get one of those great reality show moments that has nothing to do with spying, but just like people being weird, which is kind of the main generator of drama on reality shows, which is Christina sitting in a sink doing her makeup. There's just this one shot of like someone walks in, I don't even remember who, maybe Nika, is like, yeah, you sit in the sink to do it, and it's just bizarre.
It's the best way to get close to the mirror.
Yeah, right.
I do it every morning when I'm shaving. Yeah. So, you know, and again, we start to see, you know, everybody is kind of trying to form their own network of alliances. You've got, you know, Chelsea and Charnel and Brock and Colin and Nika and Brock and Colin and Christina, and she's playing like all different sides. Yeah. So, you know, I kind of enjoy, and George is just kind of off there on his own little island playing the lone man wolf pack. Right.
He wakes up and says, announces, "I'm going to go check out the pool house," like, by himself.
That's the one thing he does every day. So, yeah, no, you know, so I it is kind of fun to see all this scurrying around. You know, they try and hand off the dossier back to Chernel, and they just can't figure out how to do that. Like, I'm not quite sure why you'd put it in a microwave. That seems like a bad idea.
It's chaotic. I thought for a second, you know, when George walked in there, like, if he had found it in the microwave, that would have been great. You know, and I'm sure the producers were hoping that too when he walked in there. But yeah, none of that made a lot of sense, and just chaos with the dossiers.
Yeah. So, you know, we go through all of that, but then they get to some of the training, which we kind of touched on a little bit. And I did like seeing Doug, you know, out in the daylight. He's out of the black site. He gets to come out in the daytime, and we see a little bit of him doing some teaching, which I appreciated. And I like you, I think I wanted to see more of that.
Yeah, especially since it's all in the room, and there must have been some like on the street pavement artist training, you know, and because they talk about it later, unless it's all just things like Chelsea's been reading these books, like maybe they're all bringing it from outside, but it seems like they got a little more training than we see. And I would have liked to see Doug training them in the wild, you know, or at least at Camp X or whatever. It's not Camp X, whatever they're outside.
Yeah, no, get them outside. You know, I unless all the assessors are vampires and they're not allowed in the sunlight, you know, the direct sun. I mean, you know, I think we need to see them out and doing some of that stuff.
That
I think
could you're be. Right. There's a hilarious cut here, though, where it goes from Doug lecturing them about counter-surveillance and personal awareness to Nika in the bathroom loudly talking to Christina about her dossier, about the Charnel stolen dossier that she took. And both of them are totally oblivious to Jess approaching and listening at the door right after they've just had a lecture. Well, at least that's the way it's edited. It seems like it's right after they just had a lecture on personal awareness. And there's zero of it.
Yeah, well, you know, and Jess gets some nice moments of just kind of lurking around and, you know, listening at doors and gathering intelligence. She actually, she has a pretty fun episode, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so too.
And has some fun, you know, what is it? The young kids nowadays are saying thirsting after Doug, you know, she's... as he's talking, telling his story about going to some European city and being, you know, chased through the streets by some unknown, whoever it was, that with his girlfriend, that seemed vague enough to feel not real. No offense, Doug, but we need a little more meat on that bone to really be able to assess how that story, I thought.
Yeah, well, it was a story that didn't seem to go anywhere. I would say the opposite, though, vague enough to feel real, maybe, because if it's if it was real, the frustrating thing is that, you know, he probably can't say anything about it. That's not the vague.
That's true.
So it ended so disappointingly, where he's like, "So I knew some people, and I made a call and got out of it." You know, like.
So, you know, we get this kind of lackluster training montage. But we do get a little bit of, you know, George starting to come out of his shell here. Now, you know, the past couple of episodes, he's been the complete, you know, loser, creepy goofball. Here they start laying the groundwork for maybe he's not going to be, you know, at the bottom of the barrel every time.
Yeah.
He throws out a couple of good comments to Doug and has some good moments there, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Doug seems impressed by him. And then he, we have last week's setup of somebody getting to be sabotaged by Christina. So she throws that at George. And sabotage turns out to mean that he's going to have an extra mini assignment to do in the course of the mission. And that could potentially slow his team down. But he tells the camera in his confessional moment, he's like, no, I'm excited about this. This is going to give me a chance to shine. And, you know, we're maybe picturing George tripping over his shoelaces later on or something, but it really does actually, his prediction is right. It does give him a chance to shine.
Yeah, no, he really does take advantage of what could have been a real detriment. Now, you know, on the flip side, it wasn't exactly a, you know, brain surgery based on where what his mission was, but he does, you know, take advantage of the opening he has to make himself look good.
Yeah.
So let's get into this mission. Let's just jump right into it. The mission is they're broken up into two teams of four. We've got Brock, Colin, Nika, and Christina on one team, team one. And then team two is everybody else. So you got Chelsea, Charnel, you've got George and Jess on the other team. Mm-hmm. So, and their job is they've got to follow somebody who is going back to their house to get their dog to go take the dog for a walk. So they have to follow them into the house and then get into the house when they leave. They have got 15 minutes to try and find a secret file on a computer and get out. So what did you think of this as a mission? I know you talked about some of the, you know, yes, the location was a little underwhelming. But as far as a setup, what were you thinking?
It's pretty good. I would have liked it to be, like I say, you know, just a more urban environment, especially when you're doing a surveillance thing, you know, where, and they were hard. The evaluators were hard on them for not blending in the area, you know, and they praised Charnel for dressing like a jogger. But it's a really hard area to blend in on. You know, I think any surveillance team would have trouble in a nearly empty suburban neighborhood. Like, you're going to stand out. Like, it's like, I picture that Simpsons episode where the surveillance truck is across the street from their house with the Flowers by Irene sign on the side, FBI. you can't really disguise a surveillance team in a suburban neighborhood, you know? And so I would have liked to see them going through, you know, crowds and actually changing their profile, because some of them knew that, you know. Charnel shows that she can like take off her hat and have different looking hair and stuff, and Chelsea has the right idea but the wrong kind of execution, where she's doing something really weird with a scarf.
That would have worked better if it was like Halloween and she was dressing as a mummy.
She was kind of like a 90s superheroine, like a Rob Liefeld designed one or something, where, because she has her face is covered, but her cleavage is really exposed the whole episode, which just reminded me of those like Image superheroines from that era.
Well, so, you know, for me, though, I did kind of I liked the vibe of this one. You know what it really reminded me of? I don't know if you know that show MI5. It was called Spooks in the UK. And the very first episode of the series has a moment where one of the characters, Zoe, has to break into this house after these people leave. And so her team goes into the house, and right as they go in, the cat comes out. And so she spends some of the episode kind of like chasing after this cat, trying to find the cat. And like, then they get, it starts to rain and they're like blow drying the cat dry, trying so that nobody realizes that they were in there.
I forgot all about that.
It was a great... Yeah, it's the very first episode of the series. It's really fun.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happens is she calls like her superior and she's like, you know, I let the cat out. What am I going to do? And his advice is something that Doug echoes later, where he says, well, if, you know, just make it look like a break-in. If you you can't find the cat, then make it look like somebody broke into the house and we'll move on.
Yeah.
You know, which is very true to what a spy does in that kind of situation.
Yeah, I would have liked to see more consequences when that one team is unable to cover their tracks, you know, and they get reprimanded for it, but the assignment is over, the mission's over, you know, like, so it would have been neat if they could have extended it where if the person got home and discovered that something was amiss, they could immediately set off an alarm and they had to go running away as people appear chasing them or so, you know, you could have done more with that.
What I liked is you see this contrast, right? I mean, the one team one with Brock and Christina, they totally blow the following part, right? They just completely screw that up. I don't know where they thought they were going, but it sure wasn't following their mark. And they get really off track. And, you know, I did like how eventually Colin's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. You're going to run back there and get them here. You know, that.
Oh, yeah. What was especially great about that moment was that somebody actually used their skill set from like their dossier, where Colin tells Nika, you're the Iron Man runner, so you're going to run. And we had talked in our first episode about how what does an Iron Man, what kind of skill set does that bring to the espionage equation? And it was worked in. So
there you go.
Kind of neat. But I did wonder, so what happens there is the team is divided into two couples, you know, they're posing as couples walking down the street, and one of them breaks off at Brock's insistence. Brock and Christina break off and go another direction. And it just, again, this seemed like, what in real life, wouldn't a surveillance team almost always, it was a modern one, have communications? Like, I guess there would be some like red sector situations where you couldn't have any at all, but it just seemed strange for doing a team surveillance to not be able to communicate with your teammates.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that was, it was just kind of one of those things that they, it seemed like they put in there to just make it more difficult for the people doing it, but also just easier production wise, like yeah, having to have that kind of coordinated. I think that that probably would have been another production thing that probably for this, I mean, where you're following somebody, although they're following a person that they know where they're going. So production-wise, I would think that would make it a little easier to set up
right
what you're going to do.
Yeah. That's another thing I wondered about. I couldn't help thinking about the logistics of the production. So they're filming all the action, including the woman walking her dog, with cameras that the image quality is good. Now, I know CIA has great, you know, 8K button cams and stuff, but I doubt this reality team does. Are the camera operators using hidden cameras too? Like, otherwise you'd think it would really tip off this subject that there is surveillance, but I guess that didn't really matter the way they set it up. The subject wasn't really trying to shake the surveillance. Brock and Christina just shook themselves.
Yeah. No, I think it was obvious that like, that was just somebody that they're telling go this route and do this. And so that didn't play as much of a factor. And that might also play into why they picked some sort of like kind of desolate suburban area where, you know, having all these camera crews running around is going to cause less of a stir than it would otherwise.
Yeah.
If they were in some very busy area. Mm-hmm. And, but as I was saying, you know, we end up with one team that does the surveillance very poorly. And then the other team ends up doing the surveillance really well. Mm-hmm. You know, they have no problem, yeah, but then they completely screw up the file part.
Yes. So they have to break into the house, find a secret office somewhere in the house, and then download a security file from a computer in this secret office. And
right.
And then on top of that, one team with George on it also has this extra tangle of he needs to deal with the sabotage. So he has to locate a surveillance camera that's going to be on them and take it out. And Jeff, you must have loved where the surveillance camera was hidden.
I loved that. Yeah. It was like a nesting doll. That was really pretty fun.
Yeah.
Right out of Tinker Tailor.
It was a great little, totally a great little spy reference.
Well, and let's give some, you know, props to the location scouts finding a house that has some sort of murder room.
Right.
I mean, that was just really weird. Like, right. Like, there's a glass like door in the floor that they climb down into. And I was like, where did they find this place that had that?
Yeah, it was especially weird that it was glass because it was covered with a carpet. I mean, you would think if you were really trying to hide it, if it's like an escape room, it would be match the floor. But obviously the production needed it to stand out a bit so that the teams could discover it in 10 minutes, which seemed like a pretty short window. But yeah, it was weird. A glass door that you walk on a carpet. Yeah,
that was a little odd, but you know, what are you going to do?
But neat and good for lighting. Yeah. So maybe that was the reason for it. So when they're down in the office, you got some natural light coming down there through the glass door. This is really Jess's episode. You know, she gets a lot of time to shine, one of which she's told us from the start that she's a hacker and you know, knows all this internet stuff. So she's the obvious choice to get the file off of the computer once they get in there. And when she was introduced, I had a very strong negative reaction to her because she talks about how she like has multiple online sock puppet accounts and uses them to catfish people. And it just was a very off-putting kind of like pastime to talk about. But in this episode, wow, she really won me over. Like I was totally rooting for Jess and was really into her sneaking around. And like you're talking about listening at the door, she's doing all sorts of nice like spy double dealing throughout the episode. And then her big moment comes where she can use her computer skills.
You'll see this a lot in competition shows where there's some sort of a team challenge. You know, there's that one person that gets put in the hero role, the one that can come bring it home and get the accolades, or you're going to be the one that if it doesn't go your way, all the blame is going to fall right down on your head. And that's kind of where we see, you know, Jess land in this one.
Right. Yeah. And we don't even realize that until they're in the black site, because she tells everybody that she not only got the file, but then pulled all the other files off the drive for good measure. So she's really talking a big game, and it seems like she's succeeded. And when they get to the black site, evaluators reveal that she did not successfully get the whole file off of the computer.
Yeah, and she looked genuinely shocked, right? I mean, like when they dropped that on her, she just was completely dumbfounded. And, you know, with that, though, I thought she handled that really well.
Yeah.
You know, she just acknowledges that she screwed up. She doesn't try and, you know, fight him on it. And then also apologizes to her team, which I thought was pretty classy.
Yeah, I like that, too. She definitely handled it well. She handles everything well on the black site. I mean, well, let's finish the house before we get to that. But so that was their team. And then the other team, it was actually still their team I want to talk about, because Chelsea was on her team too. And Chelsea spends a lot of the time ridiculously hanging out of the window when the objective is to be a stealth incursion into this house. And they've done a good job with their surveillance. You know, they then miss a obvious stepladder and end up climbing, like boosting each other into the window. And when George just kind of takes charge of the team and orders everyone out except for him and Jess, because Jess is the one, you know, if it were a Mission Impossible episode, she'd be the one specially chosen because she has the right skill for the job. So Chelsea doesn't know what to do. And she ends up hanging, dangling half in the window, half out the window. So any passerby on the street, the woman who owns the house coming back or any of her neighbors would just see a butt hanging out of a window, you know?
Well, and you know, yes, that was completely goofy, but I also felt like they raked them over the coals for not grabbing the ladder a little too much. Yeah. You know, I mean, they got in without needing the ladder, and honestly, somebody standing on a ladder peering through the window would have looked just as suspicious as somebody hanging out of the window. So I don't know that it was that much of an advantage to use the ladder.
Right. And I wonder if they would have, you know, castigated them for that too, if they had used the ladder.
Yeah, I think this just really proves that old spy adage that I know you'll remember from 1,000 spy novels, that, you know, it all comes down to the dog toy. Every mission, right?
Absolutely.
No, you know, I did love that moment where, like, it's just some sort of silly thing, though, but like, everybody who's just, because we've just seen them come in, so everybody is just shouting, got to be shouting at the TV, no, keep it right there. And she's telling them to put it in like completely the wrong spot.
Yeah.
That was just great.
And the other team hadn't done so well on that front either, because when Christina opened the door to get in, she immediately broke a seal that had been placed there. It was not the classic like hair across the door. I guess that would have been too subliminal for them to pick up on. So it's a zip tie. And she just open, you know, if she had gingerly opened the door, she would have seen it was there. I don't know what they could have done. I guess gone to the window instead, but she sets off that trap from the beginning, launching the comment that you talked about before of, well, at that point, you should just make it look like a robbery because you can't cover your tracks.
Yeah, no, I agree. Looking at the two teams, I think this was interesting that it all really just came down to getting the file, right? I mean, the other team did not like necessarily cover themselves in any sort of glory. It's just that they let the file completely download before leaving, right?
Right. Which is such a classic spy movie scene. You know, how many spy movies have the scene where it's the file uploading, you know, and you've got the bar filling up and someone's coming down the hall, the guard is approaching, or the the dog walker is coming home, and you cut back to the file, and it's only 86%, 91%, you know, and it's moving really slowly. I liked how they worked that in, you know, because it's such a staple of the, like, from the 1996 Mission Impossible on, you know, it's been in kind of every spy movie pretty much.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I think that's what made this kind of whole thing work for me, is it really did. Well, there were maybe things that, like, you know, production wise it was maybe on the cheaper end of being able to pull it off, but I thought there was enough of that spy stuff in there that it really ticked some of those boxes. You know, are they following somebody? Yes. Are they breaking into a building? Yes. Are they having to download some file that's taking a obscene amount of time to download? Yes. You know, I mean, all of that stuff was there, and I really enjoyed it, and they edited it together enough to really build some suspense.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
We kind of glossed over the fact that I think it's maybe before this or after, I forget where it falls in the episode, but Charnel does get her dossier back, right?
Yeah, actually, I don't remember if it was before or after. And again, instead of, like, maybe just, like, covertly, you know, it could be to her advantage to pretend like it's still lost for various reasons. You know, it's all these things that you would think that in both a spy world and a reality competition show, you want to play close to the vest. She doesn't at all. She screams and ululates and says, it's Christmas up here. She lets everybody know that she's found her dossier, which, you know, nobody took her to task for that. But to me, that just seems like a wasted opportunity. Could have really, like, kept it going, even used it on people, because she gets the information by the end about who took it. And if she hadn't not let on that she had it back, she could have really turned the tables on Nika. And instead she's just broadcast it. You know, I don't know why anything like that it was lost to begin with, or that it's found, would be beneficial to let everybody know, but that's what she does.
Yeah, although, and you know, so that might be a ding against her, but I think overall she had a really good episode.
Yeah,
I think for the most part, I think she did really well. She kind of course corrected after last week where she was on the bottom, right?
Yeah, and I actually, well, I'd expected her to be on top. I thought it would be either her or George, both of whom had sort of needed some redemption. But, you know, they really liked her jogger profile when she was doing the tailing. But ultimately, the tailing part didn't seem to play much into the judges' decisions.
Yeah, no, I think that was interesting that she had that kind of chance to recover. So we end up getting then to the assessment, right?
Right.
And like you said, you know, Charnel and George get some credit. George gets a lot of credit here, you know, because he found the camera relatively quickly. And then he was actually he was the one that found the actual door, I thought, under the carpet, right?
He was for that team, yeah. Although the other team, it was Brock, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, I think both of them get some credit. And then on the other side, though, the assessors take no time to try and suss out what happened with the surveillance between Christina and Brock. And Christina hesitates not one second before throwing Brock under the bus there.
Yeah. And Brock is pretty pissed off about that. But I don't know. It really was his fault.
yeah. You know, I think it was just funny in that she has, I think more than anything, it was surprising that she didn't, you know, soft pedal it at all. But I think we also see her, she's frantic that she's going to be the one going. And so she's trying to throw blame on anybody else that she can to try and avoid that bottom spot.
Yeah.
Well, and I think for her too, you know, she did get this advantage and it ended up being kind of working against her, frankly, because it didn't hurt the other person that badly.
In fact, it helps them because George is ultimately the winner. They don't really call them winners, and there wasn't an advantage. He didn't get a sabotage advantage for next week. So I don't know if winner is the right word, but he is the one who's chosen as the MVP or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was right in his prediction that it would give him an opportunity to shine and he was going to use it to his advantage. He did. And it definitely didn't hurt him. In fact, it helped him. So it was kind of like one of those get smart backward shooting guns that they'd given Christina, where it ended up hurting her more than George.
Yeah. So, you know, they reveal their bottom two, which is, you know, Jessica, and Chelsea gets the other spot, mainly due to her hanging out of the window. It seemed like that was kind of that, and the weird, you know, covering her face thing really kind of was sticking in those assessor's craw. I think that seemed reasonable as far as them being the bottom two. What did you think about that pick?
Yeah, I thought that was reasonable, although I thought that, I mean, they didn't put that much weight on the surveillance. I certainly expected Brock to be in the bottom because of his park detour. But yeah, it made sense to have Chelsea and Jessica down there. I was kind of sad about that because I liked both of them. I think Chelsea's kind of a hot mess as a spy, but I still like that she's reading those books. You know, we're coming from, you know, we both have blogs about spy books and stuff. We're coming from a very much literary spy world, so it's gonna affect me when you talk about getting the books and reading them. I still like that about her, even though she's managed to misuse a lot of her knowledge gained from the books. And the assessors dinged her for that, saying she needs street smarts as well as book smarts. And then, like I said, this time, you know, in the first episode, I would have been very happy to see Jess in the bottom. But in this episode, Jess had a lot of really great moments. Which, of course, is, you know, what you want your bottom people to have, and how the shows are cut, because if there's a chance they could be out, you want them to have had good moments throughout that episode. And she did. So I didn't want to see either of them go home. Did you?
No, definitely not. And I think, you know, it was really interesting. You know, you had Jess with some really good moments. And then once she leaves the assessment, before they've decided who's going home, she even kicks it up another notch. And after some of the stuff she does there, you really don't want her to go because she decides to throw it all at the wall, right?
Yeah, that was great. I was so, that was like the smartest thing that anybody's done on the show so far, I think. She realizes, and she tells us in the confessional, that there's nothing to lose at this point, because if she goes home, then she's out of it, so it doesn't matter. If she goes back, anything she says to Chelsea will leave with Chelsea. So she's not losing anything by telling her all her secrets, which is what she starts doing. And she just immediately opens. And this is, again, like a moment that you would see in a spy movie or read in a spy book, where someone goes into a prison cell with someone else and the other person starts blurting out these super important things that they need to remember, you know, if they don't survive. Like,
yeah.
So she tells her immediately what her secret is, which she's kept really close to the vest. And I don't think anyone had figured out that she was the martial artist. And that's how she starts. And then she starts revealing other things too.
Yeah, no, that was really great. I mean, it was just such a great moment where she just starts throwing this stuff out there and seeing, and Chelsea just can't even believe it. She's like, doesn't understand what's going on at that point.
Right, she's so far behind, you know, like, and that's another reason that scene's great, because like, Jess is really like, don't people describe Smiley as operating like three steps ahead of other people, and you know, like in a chess game, he's three moves ahead or whatever. And that's what Jess is at this point. She's really gotten three moves ahead, and Chelsea's totally playing catch up and doesn't know what's going on. And you know, the character that Jess is, I think she likes to be a bit of a shit stirrer and wants to create some chaos in the house even after she's gone. So she tells her that Nika stole the dossier because she knows that'll get back to Charnel through Chelsea. She wants to, you know, she wants that to create some chaos. And I guess that goes with the catfishing personality, but now I'm into it. Because now it's much more spy-ish. And she tells her some other secrets. Now, I thought she was going to throw in some misinformation with that too, just in this sort of agent of chaos role that she has here. She doesn't do that. Everything she gave her that they show us seemed to be genuine. Is that right?
Everything that we see, yeah. Although, you know, I also think that there was enough there that she didn't really need to add a whole lot of new stuff. I think there was so much, you know, I mean, just, you know, Nika with the dossier and then some of that other stuff. I thought that was enough to really kind of mix things up.
Yeah, it's going to have ramifications for sure next week.
What I'm curious, you know, obviously they didn't need to show it because she was the one to stay, but I'm curious what Chelsea might have told her Because you got to think there was some reciprocal secret telling going on there. So I would imagine that Jess got kind of as much as she gave there before she was gone.
That's a good point. If Chelsea ever caught up that much, I don't know. From what they were showing, I don't think Chelsea quite realized why she was getting this windfall of gold dust. Yeah, we might well have just not seen that, and there probably was. And if so, that would be interesting. If, you know, I was hoping that when they found the file on the computer, that it would have something that they could use, you know, like video of the other members. And it would be great, you know, if there was a later challenge that showed that Jessica's teammates, not Jessica, sorry, that Chelsea's teammates found, that showed her telling all their secrets to Jess, you know, then that would really, you know, be some blackmail dirt against her, you know. So that would be interesting if that footage could be used in the future, if you're right that it exists.
And you know, when we think about future seasons or future challenges, I think you're really hitting on some fun things that could be plotted into the DNA of the show. You know, do you have it where, you know, the first person through the challenge gets to keep the file that they find, and then that has something that gives them an advantage that nobody else will have, that kind of stuff. I think there's so many ways they could bake advantages and have a little more fun in the whole setup of the show if they wanted to.
Yeah, nearly all of them have to do with really integrating the house intrigue with the missions more, you know, and that's anywhere that they can do that, I think, would improve the show.
For sure. So then who do you think is this episode's 00? Who comes out on top this episode?
I mean, I've got to say Jess, even though she's the loser, like it was her episode all the way. You know, it's an episode that completely reversed my standing on her, and she had the coolest exit, you know, of giving all that information away. What a way to go, you know?
Yeah, no, I think she did have a great episode. For me, I thought Charnel had a really great episode. You know, she made smart choices. The jogging thing, she seemed like the one person that came ready to be somebody, you know, to like, you know, try this different persona. She's talked about being able to change her appearance and be ready. So she really seemed to get into it, whether they leveraged that in the show or not. I think she was ready for it. She got her dossier back. She stayed for the most part out of the drama. And she learned who stole the dossier. I think, you know, so overall for her, this has positioned her pretty well going forward, I think, to kind of reset from that last episode where she was on the bottom.
Yeah, I still think she did herself some damage by revealing things that she shouldn't have, like that she found the dossier. And, you know, I think she could play things. She could take a page out of Jess's book and play things. Or Christina, who has been lying to everybody about what her... Yeah. Secret is, and now because of the information that Jess gave to Chelsea, that's going to come out, and she'll probably pay for it. But I think it's, in general, it's best to keep things close to the vest, and Charnel hasn't come around on that yet. She did show a lot of improvement in other things, and certainly for the surveillance, she was the best prepared. But yeah, I think that would still hold me back from giving her an MVP this week.
So then who's your episode zero?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I just put so much more on the surveillance than the show does, that for me, Brock made a big blunder when he decided to go that different route and lose visual on the subject during the surveillance, especially when he had been talking up that he had this military background that gave him and he denied it, but we saw it, you know, there was footage of him talking about that stuff. So I can see why Christina went along with him on that. And I think he bears the blame for that rather than her.
Yeah.
Who do you think?
I would go slightly different. I just, you know, Chelsea, she got the dum-dum edit this week, you know. George skated through. He had the spotlight shine off of him for a little bit. She just really kind of got, you know, I mean, she made some just goofy moves that, you know, didn't damage her long-term, but at least for this episode, it made her... not seem like the sharpest one in the game right now.
Yeah, definitely. Although she did handle her black site interrogation pretty well too, as the assessors said that they were impressed that she admitted that she needed to work on herself first, as opposed to Christina, who had immediately pushed Brock under the bus. You know, both Jess and Chelsea took their, you know, took the criticism to heart that they were given at that point. And I think that was a bit of a saving grace for Chelsea in the episode. But also there was a setup for more of this Chelsea George thing that had started in the first episode, where she was kind of using him, flirting with him to get him to help her with something. And then with lockpicking in the second episode, and at the end, he's the one who hugs her when she comes back in. So it'd be interesting if George actually turns that around on her, you know, when she starts out using him. Right now, you know, she's coming in at a disadvantage, having been on the bottom, and he's the MVP of the week, and he is the one waiting to greet her. You know, she's going to be pretty vulnerable, and he, you know, is in a position to take advantage of that and maybe find out some of this information she's gotten. We'll see if that happens. He'll probably blow that.
Probably. I think, you know, more than anything, it seems like the bond between Chelsea and Charnel is stronger than ever, though, right? I mean, there's no breaking those two apart at this point. Similarly with like Brock and Colin seem to be pretty tight. Beyond that, everybody seems to be a little bit of a free agent, right?
Yeah, those networks from the beginning that the contestants always seem to put more weight on than the show did anyway, but they seem totally broken by now. You know, it's other alliances have formed.
So, you know, for me, if we're looking at things, you know, to change next year or next time, I do think we need to find ways to leverage the internal drama. Like I said, if Nika hadn't stolen that dossier, I don't know what they'd be talking about the whole time. It's like they've squeezed so much juice out of that. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And it's not over.
No, I know. Next week we even see more, you know, more dossier drama, which I love. at this point, I'm just like, I'm into it. Let's steal everybody's dossier.
Yeah. I'm surprised there hasn't been a copycat at this point, you know, like hopefully they're all taking better care of their dossiers now and making it harder to steal, but
locking them up in their dead drops, I guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, the other thing though, that I'm really still very unclear of is what's the end game, you know, what are they working towards and how do they win that $100,000? It's still not clear. You know, I mean, is there some sort of like, they need to take all of these skills that they learned and then leverage them in some final challenge? Probably. I would imagine that would be your typical way of doing some sort of show like this. But at the same time, they're not setting it up very well as that's what they're building towards, which is just frustrating.
Yeah, I would hope that there's an interpersonal aspect to it where they really have a chance to betray each other, you know, because that's the more interesting ongoing aspect, is who's, you know, making alliances, who's selling other people out. And I'm assuming there will be some part of the final getting the prize money that involves, you know, backstabbing, turning on people. And that'll be interesting to see how, I hope that's one area that they manage to integrate the house politics in with the challenges.
Yeah, because right now having an alliance doesn't really do you a whole lot, it seems like anymore. So there's not really any real drive for that. So that's kind of weird. And maybe, you know, maybe by the time we get to the last episode, what I could kind of see too is, you know, you bring back the past people and have them be your spies, right? And you're sending them out on one final mission. That could be kind of fun.
Yeah, I keep waiting for that to happen. I'm hoping that we do see people come back. I imagine we will.
Yeah. So next episode, it's called Dead Drop, which is exciting, except that it's not a real dead drop. It looks like it's a bungee drop from the previews. So, and then they also have some sort of kind of bizarre like memory game that they're doing while doing jumping jacks. Right. After the last couple of challenges where I was actually kind of into them, this one seems a little more less exciting to me. So I don't know. We'll see if they can pull it off.
Yeah, although I'm kind of excited that we finally get to the trapeze episode. Who was it in the, was it Nika? Someone said, what do you call that when you like jump off a building? Is it trapeze? I think she meant rappelling, but it seems like it's going to be more bungee jumping. But yeah, we're finally going to get to that. So yeah, we'll see how it's worked in.
Well, and I do like that they're using the assessors to train them now. You know, I feel like they had the locksmith guy come in and out, but I like that we're going to get Evie next time. Maybe we'll see the other assessors kind of come back in and do some more of that. So So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the meantime, I think we covered just about the whole gamut of this episode.
I think so.
But if you want to talk more about the show, feel free to tweet me at SpyWrite or leave a comment on the show page, which you can find at spywrite.com/podcasts. And until then, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.